welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Syke.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So this was an interesting week. We do know that the market does keep some people awake. We had more calls
it's happened.
This week.
Yeah.
What are we doing? What are we doing? What's going on? What's all this mean? As Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, it looked like the cliff had been arrived at, and we were going to go over. And then there was a ray of hope on Thursday, and a little more sunshine on Friday. However, that did not overcome the entire week's results. The major market indices finished down for the week, even though Thursday and Friday looked like, well, they were green on our screen.
Little relief.
But the S&P was down 139, NASDAQ was down 234, Russell's small cap index lost 207, but we were not alone. The Hong Kong was down 245, Taiwan down 843, and even Korea fell a little over one and a third. So your pain was shared globally. And sometimes you just have to deal with losses. Sometimes they're short term. Sometimes they are a little longer term, especially if, as the majority of people who have portfolios in the stock market are using some form of modern portfolio theory, broad diversification, which Warren Buffett, the sage of Omaha, says diversification is for people who don't know what they're doing, and that most likely includes the majority of financial advisors.
It's definitely the easiest thing to do if you can just ignore what's going on in the market, and that's what that pie chart's for. Just let's the advisory firm ignore what's going on and tell you just wait long enough and it's all going to work out, and then we don't have to actually do anything about this.
But we will get paid along the way.
Now the pay's the same. That's right. That's a good point on their side. Yeah, the pay's the same. Not so much on your side.
So what most people don't understand is the financial advisor is not building your portfolio based on their professional experience and analysis of market conditions. You are, because they ask you questions. How do you feel about how much loss are you willing to take? How much do you need to take out of your account? And a series of questions that typically somewhere between 10 and 20. And if you're not working with a financial advisor, you're doing this online, you go to Fidelity, American Funds, even Schwab. If you're doing this as yourself and you go to their website and you want help in building a portfolio, you're going to answer these questions, which is basically, this is what I want, make it happen. And so they take your answers, each one of which has a numeric value. They add them all up and say, that portfolio over the last 80 years has turned out okay for these responses. And that's your portfolio. You built it. You get to live with it. And sometimes that means you are going to have some substantial losses in your account because there is no adjustment for down markets in a proper defined by the industry, who's more concerned about getting sued than they are making you money. That portfolio is going to have some periods of time where you are down at least 10% or more. Well, actually, you're going to have at least 10 or more bear markets in your lifetime, actually, which is reality but it's not the statistics that the models are built on.
No, the models are built on the long-term averages. You're always going to make more money. Everything's going to be okay eventually, and that's the part that they never get to. They never want to talk about how long-term that can be, and it can be a long, long time. You know, a 20-year gap in your ability to really utilize your portfolio, especially in retirement, that's a disaster. That's not something that anyone can live through unless they have unlimited funds outside of that portfolio. So if your portfolio drops 20% and the best thing for you to do is just leave it alone and not spend anything, that blows your retirement out of the water. But that's the way that pie chart works. That's when it's working correctly. That's the way it's supposed to work. So when the market tanks, you tank with it, and you're just supposed to hang on because, you know, we're long-term investors. We're in here for the long haul, and we're just going to let the process work for us, and we're not going to bail out at the bottom. And all of that stuff, which is all just sales jargon to say, please leave your money where it is because I only get paid if your money stays here. And that was it.
So there was we didn't catch the name of this book, but we do follow. It's been Ben Carlson, Ben Johnson. It's Ben Carlson. Yes, that's Ben. That Ben. And he's written a new book. He's in his late 30s, and he's trying to figure out, what am I looking at in my portfolio? And so he's done some real analysis, but he's done some observations, made some clear points. We're going to cover some of them. If you want to talk to us today, we do have an open line. It is 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. But the modern portfolio theory, answering all those questions your advisor asked, and they click together, just click some models that say this works for the answers you gave us. That's not constructing a portfolio to deal with today's reality. It is constructing a portfolio to deal with 80 or 90 years of history. The statistics of the model say that bear markets only occur once every 500 years. That's right. And, you know, you aren't going to live that long, so apparently you'll never experience a bear market. Except, as Ben said, in the coming 40 to 50 years, I mean, because he's in his late 30s,
right,
should expect to live to pretty close to 80. If he's healthy along the way, he could live to his 90s. So he has 40, 50 years left, that at least 10 bear markets, which are statistically not going to occur, but you know they have because they've been in your lifetime, and that you're going to have 7 or 8 recessions along the way. It's true, you can't be sure of everything. But over the last 50 years, there were 7 recessions, 10 bear markets, 4 crashes where losses were more than 30%. And over the previous 50 years, there were 11 recessions, 15 bear markets, and 8 market crashes where the losses were more than 30%. And Ben's book says, hey, that's life. Be prepared.
That is the lot. That's the lot of a pie chart investor. That's the buy and hold. That's the result that you're going to get. That's what you're expected to endure if you're just going to buy it and hang on to it. It's like, hey, 10 bear markets, just wait them out. It doesn't matter. And so for most of the time in that portfolio, what you're doing is you're trying to make up for the last big loss you took. You know, if you've got 4 market crashes in excess of 30%, that doesn't come back overnight. So it's going to have to, you're going to have to spend time getting those funds built back up again. And then you're back to where you started. So you're not really making any progress going forward, which is why we abandoned that whole process and saying, hey, wait a minute. If we're seeing a huge downtrend, let's just not participate in as much of that as we can. And then when the trend changes and we can see the money coming back in the market, let's follow the market up. And it really is that easy. It really is that simple. And people just don't believe it, and advisors don't like it because it's a lot more work to track that than just to say, well, we're going to put you in this pie chart portfolio and forget about it, and we're not going to do anything. And that's their preferred position.
Yeah. There are 2 points that came out of your comments there, Perry, one of which is the advisors, it's more work, they don't want to do it. And I've mentioned on the show numerous times that I train other financial advisors on how to live outside of the modern portfolio theory standard world and protect client capital in down markets, which we have done, particularly last year. I mean, we were out in February, and we actually in January, we already started being defensive, not because we knew there's a pandemic coming. It was just because the market-generated information was changing, and it changed the structure of our clients' portfolios because we couldn't stay in things that no longer led market returns. So markets are dynamic. They morph around changing conditions, which, you know, there are insiders, and they start moving their portfolios quietly but in advance of major changes, and that starts showing up in the market data. And our portfolios respond to that. So we protected capital on the way down. Everybody knows buy low, sell high. What they don't realize is in order for that to work, you have to sell high so you can buy low again. And that doesn't happen. But back to the issue of financial advisors not doing the work. I've had financial advisors who've signed up with me to train them. And we get going through months of how you do this, how you respond to this. And it surprises me that they say, yeah, that's too much work.
You do this all the time? It's like, yeah, all the time we do this.
I don't want to do that much work. And so they go back to, well, an easy model. And then when the market crashes, they lose a bunch of clients and they have to start all over again. And anyway, that's the reality of the business. But in back to Ben's book, he has a couple of lines which I think are really good. Bear markets, brutal market crashes and recessions are a fact of life as an investor. They're a feature, not a bug, of the system in which we operate. Yeah, just get ready. Accept 30, 40, 50% drawdown and 5, 6, 15 years to recover because that's the way it works. Which if you're 30, which he is, well, he's 30-something, which he is, that doesn't work for people who are near retirement or already in retirement.
And we don't think it should work for anyone. It doesn't matter how old you are. It's like you shouldn't take a huge hit to your portfolio that you can avoid just because that's the style of the advisor that's running your portfolio. So we have no problem with, hey, there's going to be 10 bear markets. We think there probably will be at least that many. Our contention is that you don't have to just sit and take it, though. That's the difference. You don't just sit and say, well, the market's rolling over my portfolio. Let's just let it happen. You can get out of the way. You can rotate to the strength of the market. You don't have to just sit there and take the big loss. It's going to happen. Those 30% drawdowns, they're always right around the corner. They're always coming. The question is, what you're going to do about it? You know, you're just going to wait and do nothing, or you're going to take some action, which is that's our point of view. Adapt the portfolio to the strength in the market, and if there's not any, just ride the cash for a little while and stay out of the way. We are right at our break here, Don. We are at the first break of the morning. I'd like to remind everyone that we have our next market update on the calendar for Saturday, June 5th, 9:15, right after the show. If you'd like to register for that, just go to iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. Go to the webinar page, give the registration link a click, and you will get a link back. And then on June 5th, you just click that link. You will be live online with us. We will cover current market conditions, what's going on out there in the economy, and we always have plenty of time to get to your questions. We always get great questions from the people that show up at our webinars. We'll talk about the economy with you or markets, or if you have individual securities you'd like a second opinion on, something you're thinking about buying, or something in your portfolio, wondering if it should still be there or not. It's a very good time to get a second opinion on that. So just head over to iriradio.com and register today. You will thank yourself later. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, feel free to give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Strong survive. Hey, you gotta be.
I think we have we've got a little problem with Don. Sounds like he's not coming back from the break.
Well, here I am.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Yeah. I was doing some follow-up research here on our next subject, and I'm single-minded focus here. So anyway.
You ought to listen to the show. It's pretty good, I hear. So.
Caught me off guard. Well, let's talk about tech. I was looking at some of these tech stocks. One of the big excitements that we had recently was that they added Tesla to the S&P 500. And what actually has happened is that it has really negatively impacted normal risk management processes. Because in the past, you'd look at the NASDAQ and say, well, that's tech over there. And over here in the S&P, we have 500 other companies, and we get more diversification, and we kind of play one off the other in terms of how we allocate money. That'd be standard process. The problem with having added Tesla back here is that now with Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Facebook, and Tesla, it's 24% of the market cap, of the weighting of the S&P.
Right.
So when the NASDAQ goes up, the S&P goes up. When the NASDAQ goes down, the S&P goes down, because the other 494 stocks almost don't matter. But the normal diversification process has been really skewed.
It really has, and with all those huge tech companies, yep, at the top of the S&P, they act so much more the same. You know, they act, and wasn't always the case. But that's another of those market metrics that you have to understand. It changes. They change the nature of the way they move, but they don't change in your portfolio if you're just hanging on to that pie chart. They don't make those adjustments. It just keeps rolling on the same as if they were static, and they are not. They change a great deal.
Just for example, Apple's iPad, not Apple the company, Apple's iPad, that's the smallest of Apple's five segments, made more revenue last quarter than either Netflix or McDonald's, a global sandwich company.
That is wild when you start looking at just components of those big tech companies have more sway on the market than other whole international corporations. It really is remarkable, and they've had such spectacular growth over the past 18 months that they even got bigger. So that's where we are.
So these tech companies are so large now that one of the common themes of debate, even in Congress, is, are they too big? Have anti-competitive behavior? Are they monopolies now? Do they need to be broken up? That issue is not going to go away for some time. I don't know how they're going to regulate that. The big companies, well, the majors, that they need chips. They need semiconductors. And they have proposed to Congress that Congress needs to fund domestic semiconductor construction. It's not that they don't have any money and they couldn't do this themselves, but if you can get the government to levy a tax on the rest of the population so we don't have to spend our money, that'd be a good deal. But instead of addressing their problem with their capital, they've gone to Congress and asked for tons of money to solve their problem. These are the wealthiest companies in the world and some of the wealthiest men. Jeff Bezos, for instance, in the batch for asking for a government handout, is in the process of building a 434-foot yacht. He's short on cash, apparently, and can't afford to build his own semiconductors.
A little tough to sell that story right now, yeah.
Yeah, but if you've got Congress in the palm of your hand, why not ask for more? I mean, you love the company, but you hate what they do, huh? Behind the scenes, anyway.
That's it.
Well, let's talk about inflation.
We've got a call up, Don. We've got
Jimmy from Seattle.
There we go.
Well, There we go. Okay, Jimmy, you're on the air.
Hi. Hey, my brother's going to retire in about 10 months or so, and he's in the federal government. He gets TSP, and he's going to contact you once he retires. But in the meantime, he's getting really nervous. He doesn't know what he should do or how he should proportion his money prior to him retiring between now and 10 months. And he does receive that federal TSP update that you guys said.
Well, that's what he should do. If he's on the list, that's what he should do. That's what responds to the market. And I update that every month. If there's really a serious change in direction in the market, it'll be reflected in that monthly update. And if you, others of you who are on the air, if you're listening and you're a federal employee and you're not getting our monthly TSP guidance, it's a freebie. Not a lot of freebies left, but this one is. Just send us an email, help@irradio.com. help@irradio.com. Put TSP update in the subject line, and I need your first and last name so that I can get you set up for distribution. And the first of the month, I send you our guidance for how to position your TSP plan. The same would be true for if you're Boeing, and we have a long list of Boeing employees who get that monthly update. But with regard to TSP, if he's been following that, he should have had a really good year last year because it adjusts for risk changes in the market.
And that's why it's important to remember that it doesn't matter if he's getting ready to retire, if he's already retired, or if he's 35 years old and in prime saving years, coming into prime saving years. The recommendations that we send out for the 401k plans are the ones that need to be implemented because they reflect what's going on in the market. And that's got nothing to do with how old someone is. And it doesn't matter what stage of life they're in. That's the best place to have their funds positioned. So that's good advice no matter where you are on the spectrum, from just starting in a 401k to already in retirement. That's still the best place for your investment dollars to be.
So your brother's concern, Jimmy, is because he has been brainwashed by financial services industry that as you get older, you should be more conservative, which means that you should buy more bonds. Well, that's based on bonds falling, interest rates falling 90% over 35 years. Well, if you believe interest rates will fall another 90% over his retirement lifetime, then that could be a reasonable concern or activity to make that adjustment. But if you don't believe there's another 90% from one, I mean, that's your starting point now instead of 13, you think interest rates will fall from one to one-tenth over his lifetime, then bonds make sense. But if you think they'll go up, bonds are counterproductive in a retirement portfolio. Instead of letting age drive the portfolio, let's let market-generated data drive the portfolio. And when we should be out of stocks and in bonds, the data tells us that. When we should be in cash, or in his case, the G fund, the data tells us that. So if he's been doing what I've been sending out every month for several years, he had a really good year last year. One of our clients is in TSP, stopped me in church a couple weeks ago. I mentioned this when it happened. And he stopped me afterwards and said, "I got to thank you." I said, "For what?" He said, "I just got my TSP report. I was up 29% last year." Well, the stock market was up 17 after having fallen 34. The 17 included dividends. And nobody, virtually nobody, puts 100% of their money in the S&P. So he did not have risk during the market decline. And he sold high and bought low, which allowed him to actually outperform the market last year with less risk. And your brother should have had a similar experience if he's following that guidance. So he should keep doing what he's doing until he's ready to talk to us. Does that help you, okay, Jimmy?
Oh, yeah. And when should he start thinking about talking to you guys? I mean, right when he retires, or just
when he gets his papers and he's ready to turn them into HR, before he does that, he should be talking to us. Before he turns in his retirement papers to HR, let's have a discussion about what his options are.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jimmy.
And I think we might as well take a break
here.
You bet.
We are right at the bottom of the hour. Like to remind everyone, like I said, we have our next market update on the calendars for Saturday, June 5th at 9:15. You can register for that at iriradio.com. And if you're not getting our weekend review, which is our weekly email update newsletter, you can register for that by sending us an email. Send it to help@iriradio.com. We need your first and last name, and just put Week in Review in the subject line, and you will start receiving that every Monday. It's a real good look at what's going on out there and things that you should be considering to think about, and things that probably aren't too important that you could probably ignore. You are listening to Investor Resources on the 570 KVI. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, coming back from this break, I was paying attention. So I'm right on top of it
right here.
So backtracking a little bit, what I was looking up at during the last break was the fundamental and trend analysis on those six companies that dominate the S&P. And so we use Chaikin Analytics to do our fundamental research. They do some trend analysis. They have some other factors that are built in here, but they cover these, not only the companies, but the sectors. So when we look at the NASDAQ itself, the trend on that happens to be negative. It's not really encouraging right now. And when I look at Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, and Tesla, not only is the industry struggling, but these companies, these four of the six, are also given a weak rating based on all the factors that Chaikin uses in analyzing a company as opposed to the industry itself. So that's market generated information, which addresses the issue that Jimmy is trying to figure out for his brother, what to do with my TSP plan. Well, market-generated information drives that monthly report. We update that based on what's happening and how it affects each of the choices that participants have in TSP or the Boeing. And if you're in Boeing, not getting our update, email at help@iriradio.com. Boeing 401k in the subject line, first and last name in the body of the email. So that's a, you know, that's part of the problem that is not addressed in a normal portfolio structure. It's, well, you know, these are good companies. They're good American companies, and everybody should have one. The fact that they lose 80% in a bear market, you know, they're good American companies. They'll come back, unless, of course, they end up in bankruptcy like Hertz, GE, GM. I mean, don't worry about that.
And that really is how they get into your portfolio in a pie chart portfolio. They're looking at those companies and saying, hey, this has been a great company for 50 years. You should own it because the next 50 years are going to be just like the last 50 years, right? We always see that happening. Everything is just the same decade after decade. Nothing ever changes. That's what they're building that portfolio on, that it's not going to change. Everything is going to remain the same. GE is always going to be a great company to have in your portfolio. It was for a long, long time. It's not anymore, and that needs to be reflected in your portfolio.
So the indices, the company that owns the NASDAQ index and the S&P and so on, I mean, the internal parts of that change all the time, except they don't usually change until they don't take them out until they're on the verge of bankruptcy, and they don't put them in until they're overpriced. I mean, it's backwards from buy low, sell high. I mean, they all in the index, they insert high, take out low. I mean, it's just backwards. One of the things that's driving some of the inflationary expectations is certainly what's going on in commodities.
And sure.
We have seen that reflected in our client portfolios. But there's some really interesting anomalies. What's really high? We've talked about lumber. and how high lumber is, how expensive it is. This has been something we've covered off and on for the last couple of months. Copper is another one. I mean, building demand is high as people have vacated the cities. They want houses outside the city. Contractors are doing well if they can get lumber, and lumber prices are, I mean, they've backed off this last couple of weeks, but they're still at record highs, and supplies remain short. Short supply, high demand, it means high price. Same is true with copper. And with copper, I have made comments that I think there's a long-term demand for copper, and people don't understand the shortage issue. Mark Mills wrote an article, an editorial in the Wall Street Journal this last week addressing this issue. In the infrastructure bill, there is more money being spent on the development of electric vehicles than there is on highways. So you're going to have a car that doesn't need gasoline that's going to have potholes for its avenue.
I sure wish I could drive it, but the roads stink. So,
well, actually being able to drive them is going to become a problem. A typical battery in an electric car weighs 1,000 pounds. A tank of gasoline weighs 100. In order to build that battery, you need copper and other rare materials, metals. In order to build a 1,000-pound battery, you have to mine 500,000 pounds of dirt to get the materials you need for one car. Now, you don't operate a Caterpillar on a lithium battery. So all the energy that's going to be saved by the theoretical all the electric cars is going to require a huge amount of diesel fuel, which is going to create just as much CO2 as those e-vehicles are going to save. There's no net gain. In addition to which, there are no new mines planned anywhere in the world for these rare minerals. And it takes 16 years to open a mine, because once you announce it, you go to court. Because the people who are protecting the environment will not let you open a new mine to generate the materials that they want to protect the environment. It is a vicious cycle. But it makes no sense when you consider that because there'll be an increasing shortage, let's just take copper, an increasing in shortage for the copper necessary, prices will go up, which will make these batteries even more expensive. And pretty soon, companies like Volkswagen, who have said all of their cars, their entire line is going to be electric here within another year or two. Volvo just ran an ad on TV about their new electric car. GM said within a couple of years, they're going to be all electric. The question is, where are they going to get the batteries? Because there's a shortage, a severe shortage of material, which means inflation is on the way, at least in the rare mineral area, and the subsequent uses for it, which are electronic vehicles, windmills, solar, how about handheld appliances, you know, your iPad or whatever you're using, your tablet, your computer, all use copper in their construction, and yet we aren't building any more mines. Now, reserves have increased because they are at prices of where they are today. They get to process low-grade copper at higher prices. They can afford to process it. In the past, it's just been, there's a word for it, but it's the stuff they can't afford to mine. It's over on the pile over here. And they're going back through their piles that they thought were scrap. And now at prices, they can go back and reprocess that, but you get a lower quality product. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but so far the end game doesn't look real attractive to achieve the goals that the administration is trying to fund through its infrastructure bill.
Yeah, there's always unintended consequences. things show up that nobody really thought of in the beginning. And sometimes, like you said, sometimes the delivery is not going to be on time with the demand, and that does cause inflation, and it's going to take a while for that to all even out.
Yeah, but we're not looking at inflation of the 70s, and that's where a lot of people are reacting to this. And the Fed says it's transitory. Well, maybe they're just selling us a bill of goods because they don't want us to panic and create even bigger problems. I don't know. We're going to find out as time unfolds, and as far as our client portfolios are concerned, we'll just simply adapt to the new data that the market gives us.
There's certainly no reason to make any huge changes in a portfolio right now because some people are worried about inflation. You don't change your portfolio because somebody's worried about something. It's got to show up in the market, and it's got to show up in that market-generated data that we track. And if it's not there, then it really doesn't matter how much press it's getting or how many people are going to say, well, this has to happen. You know, there has to be huge inflation, which some people have been saying since 2008, of course, and it never showed up. So it's a matter of watching it to see if it makes it into the market. If it does, you need to adapt to it. If it doesn't, you can safely ignore it and move on.
So one of the havens for inflation protection, of course, is gold. And from last year, gold has been in a downtrend, which while it's had a couple of let's say it's had a week and a half of a rally. If you were psychic and knew where the exact bottom was, but from last year's high to Friday's close, it's down almost 11%. That's your inflation protection, is buy something that's been losing money. And if I go back later, I mean, the losses in gold since 2011 have just been persistent. A few rallies along the way last year. In the summer, it did rally, peaked out in August, and it's been downhill. And we've looked at gold a number of times, and every time it gets above the 50 moving average, it just turns down and goes south again. Because this inflation story, the story's transitory. Fed has that right.
Yep, that's true.
There are other pressures like labor. Companies raising wages. The question is, if they raise wages to get people to come back to work, when the pressure's off, can they cut them? I don't think so. I don't think that works well. So that's going to be a longer-term impact.
It's going to take time to see where those numbers land, because they're not, you know, we've never dealt with stuff like this before. We've never turned off the economy before and then turned it back on and said, well, let's see if we can't light this baby back up and see where we go. Usually those are driven by a huge global event like a war, or it's economic based, and this time it's not. It was a virus that showed up, and our reaction to it. So, you know, we're in uncharted territory, and some of this is going to have to just wait and see. And that's why it's not a good idea to say, well, the next 50 years are going to be just like the last 50. They're not. Or say, well, now I know what's going to happen. Let's change the portfolio. You don't know what's going to happen. No one does. And you never do. You have to let it work itself out and wait for it to show up in the market. We are up against our final break of the morning here. I'd like to remind everyone that our next market update is coming up Saturday, June 5th, 9:15, right after the show. You can register for that at iriradio.com. That is iriradio.com. If you have a question for us this morning about the market or the economy or retiring or anything else economic, give us a call, 888-312-5757. That is 888-312-5757. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up.
And that's not a guess. It's not. It can't be a gut reaction, because that's going to be coin flip. Uh-huh. You have to use market generated data to figure out when to rotate, when to exit, and when to re-enter. And that is what we do for clients. We follow the market generated information. We're not making. Well, let's see. I think that such and such industry is scheduled to have good times, so we should have some exposure.
Now, that's a very dangerous sentence right there. I believe this is what's coming up. It's like, boy, that almost always gets you in trouble. And, you know, following market data like we do, it's not a 100% accurate guarantee that everything works out all the time. It doesn't. But it puts you in a position of being having a much better chance, significantly better chance, to have an opportunity of being in the right place at the right time. And that's what makes your portfolio grow.
Back in the 80s, when software became available to do modern portfolio theory construction, I attended the annual end of year. It was the International Association of Financial Planners, the IAFP, which doesn't exist anymore.
I think that went away.
But one of the large national firms that was doing asset allocation work was in to speak about how do you put together the forecast for these different asset classes so we know how to weight our portfolios. I mean, we're all struggling with how do you look forward? And so the key guy said, well, the week after Christmas, we shut our office down. The three of us get together in the conference room. We put our feet up on the table and we ask, what do you think about? What do you think about? No, I disagree. And so over the course of a week, we end up with our best guess about which asset classes we think will do well, and that becomes our asset allocation model. Is that so? Okay. Well, actually, things aren't much different today. They pretty much work the same way. And that drives most models for most people. They say, well, we need some data, so let's look backwards over time. And we'll use 80 or 90 years of history, and we'll just assume that that's going to work because trends tend to persist, which they do. Trends tend to persist, but not over 80 years, over the short term. And so that can be weeks. It could be months. Some stuff will last a couple of years, and then it falls apart. And somewhere along the line, if you're not paying attention or your advisor's not paying attention, which they generally aren't, they've got a story, but they're not doing anything about it, you're then going to fall apart also. And you'll be told, hang on, we're in here for the long haul. Markets always go up, which they do. If you're Methuselah, it's going to work. But we have Dennis from Olalla, and my guess is his life expectancy is a little shorter than Methuselah's. I know mine is.
You betcha.
Dennis, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Yeah, I've got one question here. How much time after being with one advisor and let's say you take your holdings and you want to move them to somebody else, you aren't sure where you want to go, how long do we have before we got to make that move? How long can you hold on to your cash?
Well, are you talking about cash that you actually have in your bank because you pulled it out
of
the advisor?
I'm talking about my investments. How much time after selling your holdings with stocks, et cetera, do you have to move them to another investor and have him invest that money for you?
Well, as long as you want. I mean, there's no restriction on holding cash.
Unless it's a qualified account. Yeah, unless you're moving a qualified account.
I'm with one investor, and I'm thinking about, you know, I'm listening to you guys, and I'm a little bit worried about the market right now, and he is one of these guys that just, you know, hang on and ride through it, and I've done it 2-3 times with him, and at 69, I'm getting a little bit worried about it.
I understand that problem. So actually the simplest way to do that is you open up the new account, and then from brokerage firm to brokerage firm, you have the transfer handled. You don't, particularly if it's a retirement account, you do not want to have it sent to you to redeposit in a new account. You avoid a great deal of potential tax problem if you do a broker to broker transfer, which requires you interview your new advisor, you make a decision to work with the new advisor, and then you do paperwork. One is going to be account paperwork to identical registration from your existing firms, which will come from you providing statements. And you should have a contract with the advisor on how he's going to get paid, he or she. If you don't have a contract on how you're going to pay them, then they're just another broker doing what your current guy is, and there's probably not a lot of benefit to changing.
Okay, got it.
Do you have a contract with your current advisor about how he's charging you, how he calculates it, and that he's acting as a fiduciary in your account?
For each one of the investments, depending on what they were, how much it were, $50,000 plus, or there was a cash amount paid, like $3,000. You pay him up front, and then he doesn't charge you anything after that.
That's a strange deal.
That's the way it's been for the last 20 years I've been with him.
So you're not paying him every quarter to actually manage the account?
No.
So it's not being managed. So that's part of your problem.
That's my worry. And every time I go talk to him, I get the same conversation. We aren't in this for the short haul. You guys have said it many times.
That's right. But the question your response would be, but at my age, the long haul doesn't look real attractive. We need to protect capital here. And apparently he has no plan. He's going to sit through it. So you should be on the lookout. We are an option. There are other firms that do there are other firms that are registered investment advisors that will contract with you to actively at least monitor the plan. Now, there are not a lot of people who are following our process that we are aware of in the local area. I'm sure there are some, but I know of us. You can talk to us. Our phone number to schedule an appointment is 800-317-9119, or send us an email, help@iriradio.com. And we'll respond with you, and we'll be glad to do an analysis of where you are and discuss what we see as changes to be addressed and how we get paid, all of which is available on our website. Now, you just have to download our ADV Part 2, which is at the bottom of the website in red letters.
And if you do just have an individual account, Dennis, there is no a holding period or time restriction on when you can move. You can move it immediately whenever you're ready.
That's what he's always said. He said, yep. I can have your money for you tomorrow.
There you go. Yep.
But then what do I do with it? I got to talk to somebody, so I got to give you guys a call.
Very good. Be happy to talk to you, Dennis.
Thanks for your time, guys. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. And that frees up a line for the last couple of minutes we have here. That's 888-312-5757, 888-312-5757. We were talking about inflation before Dennis called. And this inflationary problem, there's a lot of division here about what's going on. The head of the Dallas Fed was interviewed on TV yesterday, and I caught part of that interview. And he's saying, we know this is happening, but the issues that need to be addressed, they're not quite strong enough. But, if they keep coming, we're going to have to do something. So the question is, when they actually say, we're thinking about raising interest rates, as if in the past the market has tanked, what about it when they actually do? What happens then? Because currently the assumptions are the Fed's just going to print money. Hey, everything's coming up rosy. I mean, there's nothing to worry about as long as the Fed keeps printing money. But what happens when they say, enough's enough? There is no more. Well, your current plan has no provision. At least we have a process to manage that. You want to talk to us during the week? Number is 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. Send us an email, help@irradio.com, irradio.com. Lord willing, we'll be back next week. You have a great weekend.